Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
A warm welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria. Today we have a very special topic. We explore how technology can safeguard human dignity. And our guest is Shadi Hanchiri. Welcome, Shadi, to Care.
Thank you.
And I want to state right at the beginning that he is the grand prize winner of the AI for Social Impact Initiative, which is a joint project between Care Austria and Ars Electronica. And Shadi introduced his AFIA AI solution, and it is transforming how migrants navigate complex health systems. So Shadi, it's a true honor to have you with us, and I would love you to tell us a little bit how this all came, because I want to start that you worked with the Global Fund. Maybe you explain briefly what the Global Fund is doing and how you started your whole journey.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Andrea, for inviting me to this podcast and talking about how AI can have a social impact and be serving local communities, migrants, and people in general, not only IT professionals. You started your question by asking me, what is the Global Fund? It's actually, the full name is the Global Fund for AIDS, Malaria, and Tuberculosis. It's HQ, it's based in Geneva. After I graduated from the University of Washington in Global Health, I did a master's in public health. I went back home to contribute to my community and my country, which is Tunisia. And I joined a grant of the Global Fund that is implemented in Tunisia to stop and to eliminate HIV in the country, as it's the main virus that is causing AIDS at the end. And I started working with the Global Fund on how to increase the efficiency of the intervention against HIV, providing treatment, working on harm reduction strategies, having a better reporting for the donor, which is the Global Fund, making this grant that is offered to multiple countries in Africa and around the world to tackle this big problem, which is HIV. And this is where I started also discovering that there are a lot of people living with HIV that are living in extreme vulnerabilities. They are facing literacy challenges, precarities, poverties, which is making challenges and barriers for them to access the already free services, provided services. It's not because that we have a free service and free treatment that everyone can access. There are a lot of social determinants of health that are before the health facility or the place where we are providing the service that makes them struggle or are not consistent to receive HIV treatment, or I will say in general, prevention tools for people who are at high risk of this type of virus.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a complex disease to fight it, and it is still very relevant. And as you might guess, Care International and Care US is also partnering with the Global Fund. There is a huge tech company behind the funding of the Global Fund, which is Microsoft, and the Gates family. So we are quite experienced with what the Global Fund is doing. They are fighting the biggest diseases globally, and this is really something super important. And you described well how they tried to tackle the issue of AIDS, which is unfortunately coming back.
According to the UN AIDS last reports, There are regions that HIV isn't decreasing, but it's increasing. Fortunately, not like back in the 80s and the 90s, but as we live now in 2026, there are regions in the world and countries in the world where the incidence and new cases of HIV are just climbing and increasing again.
Yeah, it's far away from being wiped out, like some of us might have guessed. Also in Europe, it is coming back because people become more careless because there is a treatment available, and so you can mitigate the outbreak of the disease. But of course, this is not true for the majority of countries in the world because treatment is extremely expensive, and you need a good social system in place to provide it for your citizens.
Absolutely.
So CARE is also working a lot with migrants, refugees, the most vulnerable people. And what I heard from your first statement, and this is something that I've seen myself many, many times, that people arrive in very bad conditions, health condition in, let's say, a refugee camp or at a border, and they carry along simple infections that might be treated easily, but not if you're not treating them for months. So what is really shocking, that in any refugee camp you come, nearly all the children are coughing. Is this because for a simple bronchitis or something, they don't have proper treatment? So simple things get worse because they are not treated. So I think to have, and it's not always easy to find a way to the right connection point where you can get help, even if it is there, right? And this is exactly where your project comes in, to help navigate these complex structures in refugee camps, settlements, wherever you go, that you find, where can I find help if it is there? Because the chatbot itself will not cure the people, but it can help you navigate. So can you tell us a little bit more how this is working and how this idea came to your mind? Because you said you're a health person, not a tech person. But how did you develop that?
Yeah, thank you so much. You just hit the point of this, the idea and what I've been working on. As you mentioned, a lot of vulnerable migrants, they're crossing countries in with smugglers in ways that are regular pathways, let's say. It takes them maybe weeks, maybe months to achieve their final destinations. Some of them, they are already, they were living already in precarities. They were not getting their treatment in time. They might be having infections since childhood, or transmitted parasites or infectious diseases since they were young, and already ready to be, that infection can be anytime, can spread or can put their health under, I would say, the infection is come back again, and they can get sick at any time. And I think migration and crossing countries and all the stress that comes behind, that can slow your immunity, you're not eating well, you're not sleeping well. It's a major, like a package of risks that can put your health in danger and can increase this little or small probability or likelihood that you start coughing, or there is an infectious disease in your body that is showing up. For example, a lot of scientists are talking about tuberculosis, TB, can be induced by migration. And the idea comes when, I mean, even for non-vulnerable people, and my name is Shadi, I can move, for example, in a week to Austria or to Germany or to wherever in this world. And I can't speak English. I don't speak German, maybe. And I will face a little bit of a misunderstanding in the beginning, if I need to go to a hospital or which hospital, or if I need to go to a lab or if I need to go refill my prescription, mm-hmm. it's going to take me some time because I'm not familiar with the settings. I'm not familiar with the health system itself. I know health system is amazing. It's great. Everything is available. But as someone who doesn't speak the language, doesn't know the city, I don't understand public transportation. I have to work. I have to care about my family. It's gonna take me a while to access.
Challenge.
Yeah, I can't even access internet. Try to translate what is going on the website, but it's an effort, and this type of efforts, not everyone can figure it out and immediately access to this type of health services. You can imagine the situation of single moms. You can imagine the situation of minors, of separated families.
Unaccompanied minors, especially.
Yeah, unaccompanied. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And you coming to a new country, you know, for example, that you have to treat your ear infection, or you have have asthma, and you need to get your medication refilled, but you keep asking and they keep giving you directions, but you don't know how to do it. And that's where came from the idea that let's use these, innovations, technology, let's find a way that can, it's not going to fix this problem 100%, that's for sure. But another thing that can be provided to these people who can support them, help them, instead of finding the treatment in a week or 2 weeks, maybe they can figure it out in 2 or 3 days.
So maybe you also briefly explain AFIA has a meaning. Can you explain it mm-hmm. to our audience? What is behind AFIA?
Sure. It's a name that we brainstormed with Goi AI, which is the company who developed this AI solution. And the idea is that this AI solution will be providing advices and pathways how to navigate health. So, and there were migrants from Western Africa, from Eastern Africa, and we thought the word Afia in Arabic means health, and also means in Swahili, which is a local language in East Africa, means health. It's not yet the official name, but we thought, let's start with this name first, and it sounds... That's a cool name. Yeah, it's Afia in Arabic and Afia in Swahili.
I think it's a cool name and it's a cool uh-huh. product, because make it tangible for us. What are we exactly talking about? Is it a WhatsApp bot or what? Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's an AI workflow. What do we say by workflow? Okay, let's say AI bots, like the normal standard ones, are the... Everyone now knows Gemini, knows ChatGPT, knows Claude. These type of bots that are for the publics, they provide you information from the web, from everything that is available in the web in general. You can ask ChatGPT, what is the price of the gas now in Vienna? And it's going to answer you immediately. There's no limitation. And this answer might be wrong, might be almost right. We don't know. It depends who posted this information, from where this information comes from, mm-hmm. the reference. We thought that we can build on an AI workflow that has validated information, specific information to health services exactly in a certain health system, in a certain conditions that are verified by professional health, public health people, information that are officially published on ministries of health websites, NGOs that are providing cares. And when you search this AI workflow, it's going to give you only those verified information. Based on your location. It can translate for you, because a lot of, as I mentioned in the beginning, a lot of vulnerabilities comes from literacy challenges, or someone who doesn't speak English, doesn't speak French, doesn't speak the local language. So this person can type in their own language, and it transcribes that to the system, to this AI workflow, and get them the information in their local language. This solution can be on the web. It's a link where you have a chatbot like the ChatGPT, but it's AFIA. Or also it can be embedded on WhatsApp, why we choose to embed it on WhatsApp. It becomes like a contact, a phone number you add, the phone number of Afia you add, and you start chatting with this AI that is embedded on your WhatsApp, because we noticed the first thing that someone who's traveling is trying to have is internet and WhatsApp. It's like, it's a big majority of us around the world now. It's a tool, because when we arrive to a new country, we need to buy a SIM card. We don't know if it's going to be cheap. If we have a passport, if we have documents to buy a SIM card, is that mandatory or not? But a WhatsApp on our mobile phone will be working everywhere. And we already have the family contact. We have all the contacts we need.
Needs relatively low bandwidth, right?
Exactly. Yes. And in many countries, for free to use WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. Also, you don't have to pay for it. Many decisions in this AI solution came from field and operational observations. We didn't choose WhatsApp by chance. We're on surveys to ask what is the most tool you use to communicate, to search for information. Do you have smartphones? Do you have access to Wi-Fi, et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And then based on that, we choose that the solution can be navigated on Google, like a normal link, or also can be embedded on WhatsApp. The thing that WhatsApp can do is sometimes we noticed also a lot of beneficiaries, they use the voice notes. Mm-hmm. Because it's easier
for them.
They
need not type. It's easy. They can talk.
Exactly. And also for them, it's a bit sometimes embarrassing to type because they have those literacy challenges and they don't know how to type very well. And we based on that, also, they can talk to this Afia solution and it's going to transcribe their message and also answer them with a voice note saying that, hey, for example, like a mom is asking, can I vaccinate my babies? Is the vaccinations for free? What is the vaccination calendar in this country? Where can I vaccinate my babies? It's going to answer this person if it's for free or not. What are the available vaccinations? Who can support? And what is the closest health facility or place where they can continue vaccinating their babies? A lot of other things, not just an example.
I think that's really a fascinating approach. And in this case where you received the award now, this is focused mainly on health issues. But I'm wondering whether you could apply this solution also to organize, let's say, a full refugee camp where thousands of people live, not only for health issues, but for where can I get education? This and that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So is it correct that you could also unfold it with other topics to organize particular settings, be it a settlement, mm-hmm. be it a refugee center? I mean, it's super mm-hmm. to have it in this, and health issues are very serious and they are protection mm-hmm. issues, but you can feed it with whatever, right?
Yes, absolutely. We can be ambitious. It's going to need more investment, more efforts, more time. Mm-hmm. But these type of solutions, as I mentioned, it can help me if I move to Europe to find out how can I issue a birth certificate, where exactly to go to pay my bills, what educational system can accept my kids who got different type of education in another country. How do I ask for a residency permit? What are the mm-hmm. paperwork that are needed for residency permits? A lot of information, like you mentioned, that can help people who are like moving from one country to another country. Like you mentioned, it's going to be more important for refugees, for migrants, for displaced people. And also, I think that it's nice sometimes when we feel a little bit homesick or I'm a traveler. I can be an immigrant too, and I will need information that are available in different conditions and different settings.
Absolutely. So you shaped it out already, but And we saw now many positive aspects of WhatsApp, because in the so-called Northern Hemisphere, many people say, I have so many WhatsApp groups, I have to get rid of them. This is not healthy anymore. And now we heard that in many other countries and globally, WhatsApp is the only possibility, especially for migrants, refugees, and vulnerable people, to communicate, because millions, billions of people have low connectivity or no connectivity. So it's not the privilege that we have, that everywhere you can use whatever you want. And we are talking about a meta product with WhatsApp. So we are talking about the large tech companies providing AI for good, and it needs scientists and activists like you, Shadi, and also like us, Electronica, to tailor-made, humanize, and adapt the products that are around for the beneficial use of people, right? Did I frame that correctly?
Just to clarify something, that this is, we are using Meta, like you mentioned, to embed. It's just it's the frame. It's the way to that they talk to this AI workflow, but the AI workflow is not, it's not part of Meta at all.
Yes,
we can put it on maybe Facebook, maybe on other like any other platform that is widespread that everyone is using. And yeah, you're right. It's
need a vehicle to make it accessible.
Exactly.
I'm just mentioning that because I'm doing quite some tech podcasts, and I'm always asked about only, in many cases, about, many people tend to see only the negative sides of it, the negative environmental impact and all the things. Of course, there is a lot of negative things that we have to deal with, ethical questions and things like that. But what this award, AI for Social Impact, is about, to find or offer solutions that are beneficial for millions of people in need. And AI also provides some advantages, like barrier-free language accessibility, because not everybody is speaking English or French, and especially not people who are migrating from Central Africa, let's say. Yeah,
exactly.
And it makes it much more accessible if you have something in your own language, given the fact that you are vulnerable anyhow, being a refugee, is not being a privileged normal traveler, even if many people now are complaining that normal traveling is so cumbersome because we are so many and I don't know what. But the worst travel you can imagine is super in comparison to what a refugee family is experiencing, not for one day, but for weeks, sometimes months or even years. So let's talk a little bit. It is the data, the personal data of the person using the AI bot is not so relevant, right?
It's a public solution. Like sometimes you go to the airport, there is a screen, and you start scrolling the screen to get information about your flights, the timing, where to go to the restroom, how to access your gate. It's like that. You don't have to provide any personal information. It's that public information that is already available for public, from governments, from local authorities, from organizations, from all counterparts and stakeholders, that we provide in an easy way access to these without having to access multiple websites that sometimes are outdated or hard to function, and ask your question immediately on a search bar via, or texting your question, and start sort of like doing ChatGPT or Googling what you need exactly about how to navigate the health system.
But my health data is not part of this game.
There is a disclaimer, and there is terms and condition that the person needs to go through or to hear before accessing, saying that you don't have to provide no personal information, no also personal health information, because it's not needed. This is not providing prescriptions. This is not providing medical directions or diagnosis. It's gonna answer anyone's questions, X person questions, where to go, what to do, working hours, if it's out of pocket, if it's for free, etc.
I'm asking that so explicitly because then you are quite on the safe side when it comes to data protection issues, which are the most sensitive ones in health projects, because CARE Absolutely. Is piloting some health projects and we are working with many experts exactly on the line of data protection, which is the most sensitive thing when it comes to health. This is why I'm asking so explicitly. So in this chatbot, this is not the big issue.
I'm not the expert in I will say cybersecurity, etc. There should be like professionals, and then what is the concept is something called zero data retention. Mm-hmm. And in such systems, like we don't have to retain any data. It's just something that is answering. It's like even in ChatGPT, sometimes you can without creating an account. You can just install the app, and each time there is a new chat, there is no, it's not retaining anything. It's not, and also, I think it's very important to focus on literacy, technology literacy for vulnerables and for migrants. And for, I mean, I'll say people in general who are not aware, it's also part of our responsibility if we're providing such solution to emphasize and to make sure that they're really understanding that. It's a second layer of security as well. They don't need to provide any personal information. It is just navigating public resources and public information.
Which is a very thoughtful approach from where I sit. So I would like to talk now. Now, I have a question before we move on to your personal career a little bit. We want to know a little bit about you more in detail, of course. So what happens if the chatbot can't help me? Then it tells me, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you available.
It's still under development, but the idea is that if the chatbot is not able to help, it should direct this person to different resources, like websites, phone numbers, helplines, hotlines, things like that. If the user is sending or texting or also saying that this is not helpful, like up to 5 to 6 times, it should show up resources and information and phone numbers to be called.
And who would be the audience apart from the people that are using it? Who should introduce such a chatbot from your perspective? Is it a government? Is it a large NGO? Is it the UN?
Yeah. For the moment, it's still not adopted institutionally. We're working on that. Mm-hmm. Always bureaucracy. And this super jet AI thing is going really, really fast. It's not waiting for anybody. But institutions are taking their times, are checking legal advisors, like taking data protection principles, and all this. By the way, people like me, I don't know, I'm in the middle. I'm in between. I'm not that AI geek or AI professional. I should be pragmatic. I cannot be like very innovative or very, very, I will say, conservative. Should hold the stick from the middle, also trying not to let humanitarian organization, I will say NGOs, miss this opportunity of and this big shift. This is like the industrial revolution that happened back in time. Sure. This AI, I think, is reshaping how services and how the world is gonna move forward. Either we like it or we don't like it. It's a fact. It's happening. I think we need to deal with, and so we need to frame it in a very ethical way, respecting humanitarian values, respecting privacy, and we are the people who needs to make sure that this is happening, and try to find a way between, as I mentioned, the institutional bureaucratic machine and those big tech and IT very, very innovative people to find a middle ground that is well serving population in general.
And I think like this new award that we are introducing, and we can do it only with the help of a sponsor, because you might have heard that all big NGOs, no matter how big they are, but even the United Nations, we have a massive decrease in humanitarian funding, and we have to deal with it. And AI is not an end in itself. It might be a helpful tool if it is done well. And of course, it is not the main interest of the big tech companies to find applications that are useful for large NGOs or the UN. And this is why it is so important that we work together with experts like you, Shadi, and also with tech people to see, because that's not easy for a large NGO like CARE to do it ourselves. And I'm representing CARE in global fora. And I see that also for others, it's not so easy to sit down and say, okay, AI is super. So what do we do now in our projects with AI? At the same time, the countries we are globally working in are progressing massively with AI tools. Many governments, it's everywhere. And as you said, it's not a matter of liking or not liking. It's a matter of how we shape it for the use of our mandate and what we are doing and how is it helping people. And I think one of the biggest issues also in Europe, or maybe particularly in Europe, is can we trust the system? This is really something. Yeah. And I think this is also very true when we look to vulnerable groups, right? Is this your experience?
Yeah. A lot of people in the field and in general think that AI cannot answer humanitarian, which is something that has to be done by humans. I agree with that, but humans are already, like, we're using our cell phones. Humanity in general is, there's evolution. I totally understand that in-person service cannot be valued by an AI app. And when I'm advising someone and providing my empathy, we're trying to transmit that type of empathy through this type of AI solution. And people like me and people like you who work in this, we are much needed to really understand how AI work. Because as I mentioned, it's a fact. So it needs to be reinforced. And people who really care about humanitarian values and how to provide social services for everyone and no one is left behind needs to be part of this and put their hands in the door. This is what I mean. So this AI isn't just a machine learning thing that is providing, I will say, dry and tough information that are not sensitive to human values. That's why I think that we need to be there. It's the momentum. And fight and really advocate for those humanitarian values to be embedded in technology in general. Otherwise, as I mentioned, it's a supersonic jet. It's going to keep running. And back to also what you asked me, the number of refugees and migrants and vulnerable people is increasing now. And maybe it's an opportunity to fill the gap. There is a donor fatigue. There are restrictions about providing funds around the world globally. And there is, we are heading towards sovereignty, toward nationalism, toward less international and multilateralism cooperations. Mm-hmm. Maybe this tool is just happening now to fill this gap, and so we can move forward and we can find alternative solutions.
I hope that too. I must admit that I do not think it will fill the gap, but it might help bridge some smaller gaps, and it might help make us a little bit more efficient. And as we said before, it's no matter what the two of us are thinking, it is there, and it is it came to stay. And we have to find solutions that are human and rooted in the humanitarian principles. So
Yeah, I think I exaggerated saying filling the gap, but yeah, so
I
that
wish
helped
it could,
to fill
but
the
I
gap.
don't believe.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So you said you were surprised that you were selected as one of the main winners of this award, because we have two main winners selected and three prizes of distinction. So we had lots of applications, and I want to thank everybody who applied for the first AI for Social Impact Award, which is presented by Care Austria and Ars Electronica. But now today we have the chance to talk to one of the main prize winners. So you were surprised. Why were you surprised? What was your first thought when you heard it?
Honestly, it's still like a piloting idea, AI solution. It's not like scaled up. I just got a WhatsApp message from Sean, who's the CEO of GoAI, partner who implemented a Rockefeller Foundation grant to get these type of solutions. He said, "Oh, we are winning the grant prize." And I was like, "What?" I've never imagined that this, maybe it started a small idea, but now it's a small idea with a big impact, judged by Care and Electronica and maybe people around the world. Because as I mentioned, the idea came from a small observation in the field, seeing that a lot of vulnerable people are struggling to find the information, and they have to come back to the same place and ask again and ask again. They have to spend money on taxis, and they get confused and saying that, hey, maybe, and they're using their mobile phones, and always there, everyone is now addicted to a mobile phone called family.
True.
Yeah. And it started from the hint came from that small observation, and it's getting bigger and up to something that can be scaled up regionally and globally, and can embed other information, not only health, like you mentioned, many social services and protection and advices that can be embedded on this.
And in the terms of conditions for applying for this prize, it is clearly stated that it's not necessary, that this is a full functional tool. We looked for a certain level of development, and we are looking at future potentials. And also, we were really caught by the idea that health services could be provided in a more dignified way to the most vulnerable people on our planet. And as you said, the numbers will increase as the numbers of conflicts also is increasing. And what caught our attention is, because this is a global prize, so everybody can apply, but what caught our attention, to be very honest with you, also is that a scientist from the region developed something for the region. A scientist that has a global experience in working, that is highly trained and educated, applies something for his own region of origin, which is also professionally touching, and it fits very well with the localization work that Care is doing. Because don't get me wrong, it's not people like me who are working in refugee camps and things like that. We are channeling the funding, we are doing auditing work, reporting work, advocacy work, but all together with our colleagues. So it fits very well into the appetite of Care to localize as much as possible. And this is the reason why you are our main winner. So are you at the moment, tell us a little bit personal stuff about you. Where are you working at the moment? Where is your main place of work?
My main place of work is in Tunis. I work with the International Organization for Migration, IOM. Mission in Tunisia. It's the biggest office. There are other offices in other cities. Yes.
So you're super connected to the UN.
Yes.
And you have good chances also to scale your application also with others. So
we're trying. Yes.
Yes, I can imagine that you are trying, because I'm representing Care at the Interagency Standing Committee of the United Nations for Emergency Aid, and there the IOM, of course, is a very relevant and big player. So I want to this was a very positive conversation, but because I'm always saying I want to end on a positive note, looking at your region, looking at the migration flows that are going through North Africa, and this is one of the main topics of the European Union, which we are partnering with closely as CARE in Europe. What is your biggest fear or your biggest hope for the next 2 or 3 years? Because longer we can't predict it, I would say.
This is an amazing question. I think there is always fear and there is always hope. And it's we cannot have only fear or hope. I mean, as you mentioned, it's around the world. It's only not only in Africa, but Africa has been suffering from a lot of instabilities impacted by climate change. It's a lot of the world is not doing very well economically. We're not in the boomer days or 60s or the 70s now. It's sort of like a lot of countries are doing well, but there is still a lot of poverty, a lot of infectious diseases that we're trying to eradicate. HIV is still there. Malaria is still there. To repeat it again, the impact of climate change, the desertification, the crops are down, nutrition problems still existing. So all this is pushing people to move, to find a better place. The hope is that there are always people like us. There are always people who are understanding of these conditions and these incentives that are pushing people to move. I don't think like a stable family with all the privilege of life quality will just suddenly decide to leave their home and cross thousands of kilometers, pay smugglers, jump into the water and try to find a safe space or safe place.
There's proven evidence that people wouldn't do that if their living conditions would allow them to make a life in their country of origin.
Yeah,
this is proven evidence. Yeah.
Yeah, they might just choose to fly for a short holiday and organize it and go through airports and apply for their visas and do everything. Mm-hmm. So the most important thing is that we advocate for them. We have to be proactive. That's the hope, is to make decision makers, stakeholders, donors understand these patterns, what might happen in the future, how we can be ready, how we can provide a better life for people globally. Mm-hmm. Maybe also we need to provide them a solution locally. Why we have to wait until people migrate and face many, many, many risky, I will say, risky things in general.
And many lose their lives.
Crime, trafficking, losing their lives, etc. Yeah. So it has to be a holistic approach to support people locally, to support people on the move, and to support also people who arrive into certain destinations.
And we will do that hopefully also together. And I'm very much looking forward to meeting you in person in a few weeks in Linz at Ars Electronica, together with a quite big group of people from CARE International, colleagues from all over the world. I'm really looking forward to our exchange there. Thank you, Shadi. You were a fabulous guest of the CARE in Action podcast. Thank you to our listeners. And yeah, don't forget, in 1 week's time, there will be another episode of CARE in Action. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast by CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about CARE and our projects, visit care.at. There you also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.